Our next speaker is John Morton with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and he'll be talking about unmanned aerial vehicles, applications for invasive species management.
Just click on the next slide. Okay. Is there a laser?
Good afternoon. Thank you guys for the opportunity and the for me to present on some work that we're doing. Also, I'm like James, I have a lot of fun every day killing weeds. It's not out of a helicopter typically, but it's with about 60 guys with machetes and backpack sprayers down in Florida. So I do that when I'm not doing this. But we started our program, that, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the news now. There's been, you know, from drones to UAS, UAV, whatever you want to call them. We've been doing this for about 8 or 9 years to the Corps because we were sort of pardoned in because we are under the Army. We sort of got a jump start on the industry. But we wanted to develop a system to obtain high-resolution imagery down to centimeter level. High temporal resolution, a waterproof landing. This started in Florida, started in the marshes and some of the lakes in Florida, so we definitely need that waterproof capability. Response to users and to be able to develop the system in the future. Our program mission was just to provide a reliable data collection tool to support aerial mapping and our other reconnaissance on the environmental side, and it's sort of morphed into construction side as well. So, you know, essentially we wanted to take traditional satellite or aircraft collected imagery, maybe scale that down, but get on a smaller geographical area or smaller topographical area, but to obtain higher resolution imagery for our needs. So this is sort of the airframe evolution. Back in 06, all three of these systems were developed, well, the first two through the University of Florida, the bottom, the Nova now that we use, through a group of students that had helped develop the other ones that now have a company themselves in Gainesville. But I actually watched these two systems burn up in the air at two different times throughout our R&D process. But the Nova system now is probably hard to see with that white background. That's what we're using. It's the components of it are a ground control station, about an 8-foot wing, carbon fiber, and it basically breaks down into four parts. This thing has been shipped all over the world so far with no problem. That's the shipping containers. We do use LI batteries. So fully autonomous, about 2.7 meter wingspan. It weighs 15 pounds with the camera payload included, depending on what payload we use. The 750 acres per lift, we're at about 1,000 acres now per lift just because of technology advances in batteries. We're limited by the FAA from a 300 meter altitude, so that's why put that in there. And at 300 meters, we obtain about 3.5 centimeter pixel resolution. And these are, for what I will be discussing, are RGB collected imagery. I don't know if I can get this to work. Yeah, but there we go. So that's essentially it. Launch it off the front of an airboat, the back of a four-wheeler, swamp buggy, truck, whatever you have, top of a levee. All right, it only weighs 15 pounds. So with a pilot, he sort of starts the engine up, helps the guy that's throwing it obtain lift. We basically do this, and just as any field vegetation survey would be done with transects, depending on what we're looking for. That's about a 40-acre area of a marsh down on Lake Okeechobee in Florida, broken up into about 250 images. In that image, in this upper left-hand corner is an airboat, so just zoomed in by scale. For the wetland people in here, most of these round circle objects that you can see is American Lotus. That's New Forest Spatter Dock with a 1.74-meter alligator kind of right in the middle. So it sort of gives you a detail of the imagery that we're collecting. That's a great blue heron that's just was collected. Now, this was on approach down to land the aircraft, so the resolution is a little bit higher, but I always like showing that. So what are our constraints? Well, for us, and I'm sure there'll be questions as far regarding the public or other agencies, but I will speak on what our restraints are. We have a 400-meter cap in Class G airspace. We have to be 5 nautical miles outside of any airport. That's a residential airport, an agricultural airport, and 30 nautical miles for us outside of large airports. So West Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Tampa, depending on where we are in Florida. So the Class G airspace is essentially the non-restricted airspace of the country. It goes up to 1,450 feet altitude, but typically when you're talking about it, you're talking about under 1,200 feet is Class G. These are other applications. I'll sort of mention the last three: invasive species surveillance and monitoring, community mapping and wetland systems or terrestrial systems, and the restoration engineering component. This is a ranch that's under WRP, NRCS, Wetland Restoration Program that we're working on. All of these little lime, the yellow-green patches are an invasive grass species called Kogan grass that many of you are familiar with. It's all through the coastal southeast and peninsula Florida. That's actually untreated before we sent our herbicide crews out there to it. Before we could get back and refly it again, the area flooded. So this is a site that's just, it's the same property, it's just a little bit further to the north. But you can see all the treated Kogan grass patches within this area. And you're looking at about 400 acres or so right there. Another project I'll mention is down on Lake Okeechobee in the Eagle Bay area on the north end of the lake. So the area on the left, or the area that we mapped here, is about a 3,000-acre littoral, emergent littoral marsh. The red circles are buffers of the Everglades snail kite, which is a threatened, or it's an endangered species in Florida or in the U.S. And as they start nesting in the spring through the summer, we have to observe buffers around the nest. Well, at times, some floating invasive species, water hyacinth and water lettuce, floating aquatics, start invading in these areas. So back in March 2012, we had 17 active nests when the buffers went into effect. So essentially we were unable to send herbicide crews on airboats to treat these two populations of plants, or these two species of plants within the population. By July of that year, that 142 acres had moved into 537 acres, and we also had 29 active kite nests during that time. So being able to rapidly deploy our system and, one, discover all the populations of water hyacinth and water lettuce in there throughout a series of time, we actually flew this again in September of that year once the buffers were lifted, and we were able to go in there with a herbicide cruise. There we go. So this is just a section of, sorry, I think it's taking a little bit to load. This is just an area of that marsh. That's water lettuce, the lime green, and water hyacinth, the very dark green. So I did have a little bit more hair before I started this program, but I know that we needed to be able not to sit behind a computer and digitize every little population of plants that we're interested in finding. We need to be able to input the imagery once it's collected into a system where it would help to be able to auto-classify it for us. So we contacted the University of Florida, Dr. Ammer and his guys down there in Plant City. They work at the Gulf Coast Research and Education Lab. He's a geomatics expert in the field, so we went to him to see if he could give us a little help with this. The first research was based on object-based classification. So typical geomatics work has been solely on pixel-based reconnaissance and algorithm through the evolution of the research. So we wanted to look at using an object-based approach to see if we could get better accuracy and quicker accuracy or quicker results. Essentially what we did is we had to decide on what segmentation scale we needed to use to input into the algorithms, into the software. So this is the original imagery. This is, again, some of the LOTUS that you can see. At scale 40, it's broken down into a couple of square meter segments. Each segment's or a few square meters. Now they're down into square feet, and by the time you get at scale 10, they're actually down in sub-foot level. But we decided on 75 as sort of on that project, that would be our best scale for this test. And our best accuracy was about 70% or so. That's low compared to if you're looking at a 20-acre area, but we were looking at about an 800-acre area of floating weeds. And this was 5 years ago, so we knew 70 we could probably live with, but we wanted to see if we couldn't increase this. So as about 2 years ago, we started looking into the neural networks and developing algorithms associated with those neural networks that are used in all the different fields of science now to see if we could reevaluate this area and give us better accuracy. So we came back and looked at the area. This time we used more ground truth points. So these are actually points that went out in the field, gathered exactly what was there as far as species composition. Instead of using the object-based approach, we took training data based on 32 by 32 pixel width. So in this situation, these were 2.5-3 centimeter each pixel. So then we extracted those around the entire 800-acre area. So what you have is you have the X value is your pixel count, 32 by 32. The Y is the species associated with that as one data item. And we were able to achieve up to almost 80% accuracy, so 10% more than the object-based classification alone. Our current research now is based back on that WRP project that I showed you earlier, back on Kogan grass, and looking at if we can extrapolate and sort of hopefully repeat the results that we got at Eagle Bay or on Lake Okeechobee in a terrestrial environment. So this is Bluehead Ranch. It's an 18,000-acre wetland reserve project down in Central Florida. And again, this is, you probably can't see it, my apologies for this. But in this certain area, this is about 400 acres that you're looking at here in this blue block, and it's almost entirely composed of Kogan grass, but it's a mosaic of Kogan grass. So there are native pasture species and native wetland herbaceous species that are growing within that site because it does seasonally flood. So we wanted to look at, basically, can we take this area as a whole and not only pick out the Kogan grass populations before we go in there with herbicide crews, but also map out the community, the vegetation communities associated with this 18,000-acre block. And that's where we are now. We've gone through, as of about 3 weeks ago, I don't know what I just did. Sorry about that. We've got about 800 ground truth sites in this 400-acre area, that we're going to sort of extrapolate out over the entire 18,000 acres that we think covers the majority of the vegetation communities that are there. We've gone through and done our ground truthing. So as of last night when I talked to Amr and his team, there's still like 36 more days left to do the analysis of it. So this is extremely tedious and timely process, depending on what software and what algorithms you're using. They're continuing to develop them, but we're not there yet. Data collection from UAS or from drone imagery collection, the industry is up to par now. Like, we are getting governmental and industry image collection that are great. The problem where we lack, in my world, the analysis of that imagery is where I see our time and resources being devoted to for the future. So that's, again, just kept classifying those images for that. And I touched on things in the future. I want to leave a little time open if anyone has any questions, or I'll be available the rest of the day. So thank you for your time.
Is there a question or two? We got time for one or two questions. If not, John will be around here. Oh, we got one back center.
We assessed what the computer gave us as far as at those individual locations that were inputted compared to what we observed in the field doing ground truthing. So we compared ground truthing to the analysis from the image software program.
One more question, Gentes?
Okay, so the land, we don't land it in the airboat, although you could catch it. We landed in the surrounding marsh. We landed on top of levees in parking lots. It's built fairly tough for that, and it does float. The cost associated with that, if we're doing it internally within our group now, which would compose, I'm not in the group that's collecting now, but about $2,500, $3,000 a day for Corps of Engineers employees to do it. And I think the industry is by far going to surpass that and, you know, being able to do it at a much lower rate. But it used to be about tenfold higher than that. It's just.
Great. Thank you very
much,
John.
Thank you, guys.
And it's interesting how the development of one technology gives rise to other challenges like the bottleneck in terms of data processing.